pay transparency laws have been cropping up across the country. California Governor Gavin Newsom signed one into law just last week, requiring companies with more than 15 employees to post salary ranges and job listings. Colorado's had its own transparency law since last year, and New York City has one that takes effect next month. So what does this mean for workers and employers? And should there be more pay transparency here in Wisconsin? Our next guest studies some of those questions. She says when you look closely at the effects of these laws, results aren't always what you'd expect. So I invite you to join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you think salary ranges should be posted on job listings? Would that help your bargaining power as a worker? And if you're an employer, what would pay transparency mean for you? You want to see more transparency around wages required in Wisconsin? Call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Zoe Collins is an assistant professor at the Harvard Business School who researches pay transparency. And Zoe, thanks for joining us today.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you.
And as you look at it through your study and research, what's driving the trend in pay transparency laws these days?
Well, it does seem to be gaining traction. I agree with you. But I don't think it's new to the U.S. So, in fact, there have been episodes in history, namely the earliest being 1918 that I know of, when there was a brief period and everybody's salaries were posted publicly in a newspaper for a brief period of time. So I don't know that this is totally new, but it definitely feels exciting and like it's gaining momentum.
Yeah, and there are a lot of different versions of these laws, but Zoe, if you could explain in general how they should work.
So, typically the way people think about transparency is from the perspective of someone who's underpaid. And if we had a mandate enabling them to see what their coworkers are being paid, they'd suddenly realize that they're being paid less than their equals. And then they could use that information, bring it to their employer, and ask for a raise. So I think that's the intention of the policy, is to sort of close pay gaps between people who are doing similar work.
But as you have done your research, it turns out, as I understand it, that in general, people would be willing to pay a couple weeks of their salary in order to keep from everybody else knowing what that salary is.
That's right. So one question is, why do we even need these laws in the first place if you can just talk to your coworker? Yeah, that's totally the case. And so, you know, the question is, why don't those conversations happen? And what we find in our research is that people's demand to know this information is quite high, but equally strong is their demand to keep their own information private.
That makes some sense there. Zoe Collins joining us, assistant professor at the Harvard Business School, taking a look at pay transparency. And through your research, do we know now how, or are we beginning to learn how pay transparency can affect employers?
Well, that's a great question, because yes, indeed, I think that's the case. But most of our research is actually based on transparency laws that are focused on revealing salaries internal to a company. So this is when firms are asked to let workers talk to each other, post anonymous spreadsheets using Google Docs, whatever it is. And now we're looking at a series of laws that actually publicize salaries in the job advertisement itself, meaning that not only will you learn more about what your employer is paying your coworkers, you'll also have access to information about what people are being paid who are doing similar work in other firms. And on the other side, the employers themselves also have more information about what their competitors are paying. And from this new set of policies, we have to sort of pick different pieces of evidence from our past evaluations and decide what's going to be most applicable. And so I can launch into my speculation, but of course, this is all based on studies that have been done on different types of pay transparency policies.
So what would your speculation be at this point? What are you thinking?
I think the closest form of pay transparency that speaks to this is actually work that I've done with my co-author on what happens when an employer sees the wages of other firms.
Oh.
And this is true when salary benchmarking is more widely accessible. And the context we study is when firms gain access to real-time data through a payroll provider of the wages for people in the position that they're hiring for, but across the industry. And what we find there is that employers see this information, it's news to them, which is point one. Point two is they tend to then move their wages towards the median of that distribution. And so this means that workers end up being paid more equally who are doing similar work across firms. There's sort of convergence of salaries towards the median pay. And then on top of that, we do see boosts in salary levels. And this is accompanied by increased retention that firms experience and also higher vacancy fill rates.
So, wait, Colin, from the perspective of a job seeker, I would think that pay transparency would be very useful. It seems like something that people looking for a job would care a lot about. How do we know how pay transparency affects job seekers?
I'm so glad you asked that. So the best research we have on that is actually in the context of Germany. And it's my colleague, Simon Jaeger, Nina Rassil, Chris Roth, who have done work in asking workers, what do you know about your outside options, what you would get if you asked a different firm to have a job? And these are for workers who are currently employed, so they're not necessarily searching. And what they find is that those workers who are typically at the lower end of the earnings distribution in a firm, they tend to underestimate what they would get if they were to try to switch jobs. So from their work, we can take a leap and say, well, if jobs were more explicit about what they would pay, and these were posted widely on job advertising boards, then people who are lesser paid today would raise their expectations of what they could get if they switched jobs. So that's what we would expect to see, potentially more movement among those who are underpaid.
What about the emotional impact of pay transparency? What you know as an employee, how all the other employees are faring in terms of wages, and you compare yourself to them. What have you found in terms of emotional outcomes or well-being?
Yes. So this is a complex question, but we have a lot of evidence on this. So pay transparency, as discussed and as we've been discussing, often focuses on what somebody learns or feels when they discover information directly about a peer. So someone in the same position, title, same location. And we know from that setting that people who find out they're paying less than they thought relative to their peers experience low morale. And this translates into lower effort, lower productivity. We can't rule out that people who discover they're being paid more than they thought don't have a symmetric positive boost. So it could be that this goes both ways. The piece that people forget is that most pay transparency policies also end up revealing quite a bit about what your seniors earn and what you might earn if you got promoted or say you got a different position that's more lucrative in another firm. And that tends to be very motivating and raise morale among employees.
So pay transparency for executives or people who are above you in the corporate structure might be an incentive for you to work a little harder towards that next raise?
That's actually, so overall, when we look at these morale responses, because people are most surprised about what their seniors earn and what they could get when they're promoted, it kind of swamps these negative morale effects we've seen when peers compare each other to themselves.
Very interesting. Zoe Cullen, our guest, assistant professor at the Harvard Business School, who researches pay transparency with pay transparency laws taking effect here in New York City, and it's going to take effect in California at the beginning of next year, just signed into law by Governor Newsom last week. What do you think about pay transparency? Would you like to see it in Wisconsin? 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Michael in Appleton now. Michael, you're on the air with Zoe Cullen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I would normally say Rob, but I'm calling for... So I wanted to just say, as somebody who has recently spent a fair amount of time looking on the job market, something like this in Wisconsin would be a huge time saver for so many people. It's incredibly frustrating, to sink time into filling out an application, potentially interviewing for a job that, it turns out is not going to pay enough to make a living. The other thing I just wanted to bring up, not that it's the same, but just related, one thing I've noticed a lot of employers will do is they have policies or communications or what have you, trying to dissuade their workers from discussing salary with other employees. And I just wanted to make the point that that is something that is protected on a federal level under the NLRA and NLRB.
Michael, thank you for pointing that out, and thank you for sharing your experience out there in the job market. And, you know, at least recently, we've heard that the job market's been pretty good out there for those who are looking for work. But at the same time, if you don't know what that work's going to pay, what good is it for you, Zoe?
Yes, I completely agree. I completely agree with this. So Michael brought up an important point, which is, you know, technically, many of us are protected in discussing with our coworkers salaries. And that law has been in place since 1935. Now, it's been called a toothless tiger because if an employer were to retaliate against you, it's not clear they would face any punishments, except in specific states that have started to really strengthen this law and put in additional penalties. And so I would say that despite the existence of this law, some of these pay transparency policies are very likely to shift beliefs about the pay of others, because even in spite of these laws, there's been so little discussion and there has been sort of a veil of secrecy. So I'm excited to see how it will help you weed out the jobs that are appropriate and the jobs that might be less so.
Michael, thank you for the call. We're talking to Zoe Cullen. She's an assistant professor at the Harvard Business School, and she's with us to talk about pay transparency laws, how they work, and some of their potential unexpected consequences. And you're welcome to join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. We know about the pay gaps. We know that they exist, but we don't know how big that gap can be. Should we? 1-800-642-1234. We continue our conversation and perhaps hear from you coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're picking up our talk with Zoe Cullen from the Harvard Business School about pay transparency laws and what they could mean here in Wisconsin and for you. And we want to hear what you think at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And Zoe, so one of the main reasons given for transparency is reducing the pay disparities that we know about among women and people of color. But do these pay transparency laws succeed in that?
By and large, the answer is yes.
Oh.
Yes. So it's true that many of these policies, in fact, all the ones that I've considered and the ones that I've reviewed from others, have had the tendency to close gender gaps. And oftentimes we don't get to explicitly see ethnicities, but we would expect that, in fact, any of the groups that are typically at the lower end of the distribution would experience gains relative to the people at the upper end.
Interesting. Let's go to Nels in Viroqua next. Nels, you're on the air with Zoe Cullen.
Yeah, good discussion. Discussion that several of us have been thinking about for several decades now. It's a crime that this hasn't happened already, but both from a employee standpoint and also from a manager standpoint, makes it a lot easier to manage when you know what you're dealing with. Here's the problem. You can talk all you want about peer, you know, relative pay amongst peers, but the thing that really matters is not the peer-to-peer so much as, I mean, that's where a lot of games and a lot of resentments and a lot of problems occur in managing your people. But the real problem that we've got is that the upper management, the senior executive class, their pay, even if you had a pay transparency law put into place as posed, it's not really going to get to the heart of the problem, because a lot of their pay is non-monetary remuneration. Right? They're getting stock options. Mm-hmm. They're getting all kinds of other benefits that can't be and aren't on the books precisely, so they aren't on the books.
Nels, I appreciate that perspective. And overall compensation for some of these executives, do pay transparency laws include some of the deferred compensation that may be included in there? And if not, what are we missing out when it comes to executive pay, Zoe Cullen?
You know, this totally true that a fair amount of compensation for the very, very top earners might not be included in the types of base pays that are being reported. Now, the SEC does require that many of those forms of remuneration that were listed are included. So for CEOs, for example, we've seen laws that have been in place for decades now that do require full disclosure. But in general, absolutely, it's going to be hard to think about how these salary range policies, for example, are going to say much about what a COO or a CTO is really earning. That said, stock options and equity, that we're talking now about a very small percentage, I believe 2% of compensation in the U.S. So, in fact, it might not be affecting the salaries of the people who generally these policies are intended to influence.
Zoe, we're seeing an increased number of gig economy workers, and I'm wondering whether or not pay transparency would have any impact on them.
Well, to the extent that they are also looking at these job boards, considering their alternatives, yes.
Okay, sure. Do we know how remote work is generally being treated under pay transparency laws?
Well, we've seen some interesting examples where employers who are okay with remote work have decided that they were going to avoid salary range posting laws in any particular state. So to that extent, there's sort of some spillovers between the location of the job and exactly which law applies to that employer. However, I'm not sure this is going to matter, as California and New York are so large that it's hard to imagine that employers who are operating in either of them are going to try to avoid posting in those states.
But haven't we seen stories with Colorado's pay transparency laws where employers have avoided that?
That's right. So Colorado might have been in a slightly different position than California and New York, or that's my go-to intuition.
Zoe, I want to ask about the unintended consequences of pay transparency laws. What has not been considered that you have found in your research?
Well, so one thing I've described to you that I haven't gone into detail about is exactly how this gender gap is closed. Because we've considered this from the perspective of an underpaid worker asking their employer for a raise. And we haven't yet talked about what happens when we think about the employer's perspective, what they decide to do when they know that raising the wage of one worker means they might have to raise the wage of everyone else. Mm. So to walk you through this, if that's the case, that an employer recognizes that a salary increase for one person means costs across the board, it's going to make the employer much more incentivized to bargain aggressively. And the optimal wage setting for that employer is now to set a lower average wage for everyone. And that's been something we have seen happen. It looks like it's the case when the U.S. rolled out state-by-state laws that increased protections for coworkers to talk to each other about pay. We saw the wave of Google spreadsheets that anonymized and shared salary information. And then on the tail of that, we saw a decline in the salaries, the average salaries.
Is there a role that organized labor plays in these pay transparency laws? Is there something different for unions?
So what I described to you is actually a setup where each person is bargaining themselves. So one person asks for a raise, and if they get that raise, then the employer has to renegotiate with everyone else. But in the context of a unionized workforce, people are bargaining collectively. And so that type of spillover looks very different. So when we look at occupations with high rates of unionization, transparency does not, in fact, affect the average wage levels.
And just to reiterate here, your research, Zoe, says that one of the potential unintended consequences here, it could generally lower wages across the board as businesses are concerned about having to raise wages for everybody if they do so.
That's true. You captured what I was saying exactly, except that I want to highlight those policies we've been studying in the past, the ones that have been very popular here in the U.S., have really focused on internal transparency. These are cases where the employer now faces spillovers between the negotiations with workers they've already hired and new workers for their firm. And now we're looking at potentially a different set of competitive effects where work for employees who are now looking at firms that are posting wages outside of their own employer are going to be negotiating with a different employer. And the same spillovers are considered quite distinct. Now that other employer can raise the wage for this new hire from a different firm and not worry about those people who had been, you know, the other employees at that original firm.
And finally, Zoe, with about a minute we have left, who tends to support or push for new pay transparency laws? Is there momentum for it on a wider scale?
I think there is. Surprisingly, not surprisingly, but given the counterintuitive results I just described to you, it is still the case that employers seem hesitant to adopt pay transparency laws and employees seem to advocate for it. Now, I don't think that's the full story. I think we're hearing from a very small number of voices on the employer side, at least. So it's not entirely clear to me that employers are not going to be supportive of these pay transparency laws. But I do think that the advocates are coming from, generally speaking, equity concerns and employees who are building on the wave for greater equity in the workplace and in other parts of society.
And what are you looking at next? What's the big question you want to answer that's on the horizon, Zoe Cullen?
Well, I'm really curious about this directed search piece. Are people directing their applications towards employers who are higher paying employers because they know something about what those employers are paying?
Zoe Cullen, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Zoe Cullen, she's an assistant professor at the Harvard Business School with us today to talk about pay transparency laws that have been popping up across the country and some of the unexpected downsides and upsides that can come with them. Her research continues, and your input is always valuable. So if you've got more to say on the pay transparency and what it could mean or do in the state of Wisconsin, you can always email us ideas@WPR.org. We're always up on the Facebook page where we asked you about it earlier today, and you can still chime in. Would be interested in knowing what you think now that we've addressed some of the direct consequences and some of the unintended consequences, ideas@WPR.org, or check us out on Facebook.